Meanwhile, Portland radio authorities started to get a buzz as a pirate signal downtown Portland.
Now, I recall that barely.
And I don't even actually know the frequency they were using, but at the time, my girlfriend and I were both doing some work for the film center, and it was always on there, and she won tickets to go. We went to see a band called Low. We won tickets to see them at the Doug Fir, and they were doing all kinds of great stuff, and I just heard more and more buzz about the Portland Radio Authority. The flashback to this is I wasn't hired yet. I was still doing temp work as the buzz for PRA was growing. They got busted by the FCC. We got busted by the FCC for the pirate signal, and when that happened, I think a lot of people quit. Because, I don't know, if it lost the outlaw appeal or people didn't want to do it because it was only on the internet, which, you know, they would probably kick themselves now. And we're like, yeah. Oh, the internet, is that thing still around? As my microphone cuts out.
Well, I've totally noticed that one over the years. Like, you know, I used to do the shows with indie media, and people are like, oh, you have a radio show. Oh, it's on the internet?
Uh-huh.
You know, and then it's just funny to see how things quickly changed.
Because at that time, you know, there wasn't really any 3G and all that kind of stuff to speak of where people can get everything on their mobile device. Mm-hmm. But basically, when PRA got popped by the FCC, they went to just purely being online on praradio.org, and I think because a lot of people left, it opened up a ton of slots. So I essentially sent an email to Jeff Simmons, who's now gone on to start Radio23.org, and he's got Cascade Community Radio, and all that stuff is growing, and we can talk more about that later if you want. Got in touch with him, gave him the idea for the show, and he was essentially like, absolutely, sounds great, come on board, because I don't think there was anybody doing any kind of talk or news or any kind of current affairs show.
Mostly just music, wasn't it?
It's mostly just music, as I think it still, for the most part, is to this day on PRA. So that was how it started, and Jeff Simmons brought me in there and gave me the tour and gave me the lowdown, and it was in our old studios. We, of course, have been in these new studios for, God, it's going to be 2 years almost, I
wow,
guess.
Wow, already?
I think. Or maybe it's just a year.
Maybe a year.
Maybe just a year.
Or somewhere between a year and two.
I'm a little confused. Well, yeah, but that's how I ended up at PRA, and even though the question for me comes up, and I must admit it's coming up more and more, of the question between, well, can I maybe just do this better from home, from my kind of home base and my home office where I can have things set up all the time. But there's something I've always liked having a place to go to at a scheduled time to do your thing. So whether that was doing theater and sound design stuff back east, I liked the fact that, you know, the play opens on January 7th at 8 o'clock. It's like, so your stuff better be done.
Yeah.
It gave you the deadline to get that sound design together. So the same thing with having a radio shift, as you know, that Friday mornings at 10 a.m. I have a show and I'm live, and especially now with the folks that carry a show and carry it live,
they're expecting it,
and I'm even more locked in, so it's kind of, it's difficult to just be like, I'm not going to go in, which, yeah, doesn't happen, and I plan things out in advance so that, you know, hopefully folks know and they can plan around it. So, I mean, that's the way it's been going, and that's the way I foresee it to continue going, but I think, you know, definitely I probably am going to start to morph to maybe do a little more home-based and audio-video kind of work. I'm not saying I'm not going to do a weekly show, at least not yet. There's something about it that, you know, it's hard.
Yeah.
The amount of news that I go over and have to just accumulate and save and collate and cross-reference and put in, it takes a toll. And
yeah.
I wonder sometimes if Media Monarchy would be better pointed towards getting a little more in-depth into certain areas. However, I also know that the whole reason I think the show is what it is and why it's, you know, as popular, if I can say that, as it is because of the format, is because it has a poop load of news in a two-hour, you know, weekly podcast. You can pretty much get the rundown of everything that's going on.
Well, that actually, shoot, that correlates to a whole bunch of other questions I had as well. But specifically, I've known you for years, and I'm still wondering this one every week when I tune in and listen. I'm sitting there going, you know, how do you manage your time to, you know, to get Media Monarchy ready each week? I mean, there's a ton of information that you're coming through. I mean, you've mentioned before that you use the, like, what is it? It's the Gmail thing where it dumps news.
Yeah, I use the, like, Google Reader is their, like, RSS subscription service. So I've subscribed to way too many things, and I need to do some, you know, cleaning in there to get it rid of things that just kind of clog it up.
But, I mean, how many hours, like, per week goes into a two-hour episode?
I couldn't even say.
It's, no guesstimations at all.
I mean, because it would basically, you know, it would probably be a few hours a day.
Mm-hmm.
So, a few hours. So, I mean, at least 12 hours to make 2 hours.
About as much as a full-time job.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably a little more, I'm guessing. Mr. Modest here.
But it's, I mean, that's the thing. It's a way to, and again, something I think I kind of wanted to address with having you in here is to sort of show in a way where there's no kind of magic, you know, secret. Now, yes, of course, I've studied media essentially all my life, so that part comes naturally to me. But as far as the production of the show with Ustream videos and the podcast and all that other kind of stuff, it's like I've just kind of been learning as I go along. And I think it's important to kind of tell folks where it's like, no, I just subscribe to websites that I like.
Mm-hmm.
I go through those feeds. I put things in bookmark folders. So, like the News Purge that we go over that has the little subheadings of things, whether it's 9/11 news or geopolitics or holy hexes or all those things. I have little folders in my, you know, bookmark manager. And I put the related stories in there, so as the week starts to go by and I start to build things in there, you can start to see how things will fit together, and I'll sort of update those and maybe, you know, pull out something old and put in an update if it's kind of a breaking or developing story. But I just kind of build them and catalog them in a folder. In a folder, and then they're able to sort of, like, I can post them. And I'm not starting from scratch. It's like the work has already been done, kind of whittling it down by having it in those folders. Then I also just try and find whatever, maybe, you know, I can only really reasonably by myself post one good thing to Media Monarchy a day.
Mm-hmm.
Because then I started Food World Order, and then I started Cyberspace War. And fortunately, I've got Alan in Omaha posting to Cyberspace War. Mm-hmm. If I could get somebody doing the same thing on Food World Order, if I could start to get folks that were interested in, say, some of those subheadings into just 9/11 stuff or just geopolitical things and have them focus and be able to say, you know, geopolitics, Zach, is your topic, so once a week, you know, I'd want you to post something. And whether that was just a breakdown or a blurb or just a list of headlines or something in a way to kind of cover that
area.
And that, to me, would be the way to sort of help build Media Monarchy and to have... I wouldn't even want to think of it as like, oh, I can have, you know, tint my fingers and have my minions to do work.
You're not Mr. Burns, I'm afraid not.
I'm not striving for that. But it would be an awesome way, I mean, to help build it. I know... I loved seeing it. Years ago, now, blacklistednews.com is pretty much just run by Doug.
Yeah.
And I've been in touch with him. We don't keep a whole lot in touch anymore because he got a couple extra folks that were doing their own other smaller websites to sort of shutter those sites and come on board with Blacklisted News. And once he got some folks else in there, they just exploded, and they've become one of the premier alternative news sites out there.
Excellent.
And it's because there's a few people, I think, kind of around the clock.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'll be out at 2 in the morning having a cigarette and looking at Twitter on my iPod and see stuff from Blacklisted News, and it's just...
Yeah.
It's just trying to, I guess, to build that, and I can only kind of slowly and surely do it because there has to be some kind of quality control in a way. Because it's still, I want to have the sort of, I guess, editorial control that I want things to look the certain way and to, you know, have some level of quality that I think is the thing that's brought people to the site in the first place.
Well, Media Monarchy has a feel to it, you know. It's, I mean, it's practically got a personality to it. You know, anytime you've, you know, I've been like, gosh, you know, I'm spinning too many plates, could probably use some help. And I'm like going... Well, I'd like to help, but I've got to get my stuff figured out, and then, oh, God, I don't want to steal the thunder, because it's your thing. You know, it's like your baby. You know, I'll babysit for a little bit, but I'm not going to guarantee the kid's going to look the same afterwards.
But that would be really, I think, for me, kind of ideal pipe dream kind of way to keep kind of growing and building the site, and that would be having people working those specific areas that would then leave me maybe to just do the show version and go over all that media, or to maybe begin to focus on maybe just doing more interview type shows, like a Red Ice Radio style, or any number of things. But yeah, I mean,
well, it can easily build into a network of different shows, which is always something that I'm like, I almost fantasize about it whenever you're like doing your weekly show. I'm just like, oh gosh, you know what you could do.
With the Cyberspace War show, and some of those things you and I have talked about.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah, yeah. Like, I mean, there's plenty of times even my coworkers, like I've gotten quite a few of my coworkers to actively listen and look at your website, and they're sitting there going, gosh, how do I help? I don't know anything. Oh my God, I don't know anything. And they kind of panic about it, but it's just like, it's because it's got that kind of magic, like feel to it, because you run a good show.
Thank you.
You run a really good show.
Thanks.
And so people listen to it, and they're like, oh, gosh, he's such a professional. I can't even hold a candle to that. But it's not like you went to college to do exclusively this.
No.
You've been learning on the fly.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I mean, now
It's patience.
I went to college and have a degree in communications, but that covered speech and debate, you know, and all this sort of other kind of general things. No, this was something my own kind of passion and interest kind of brought me into.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm going to go back to the questions.
Okay,
now.
Please.
I think we've bounced around.
Oh, and then we could do lightning round at
lightning
the end.
Round, quick. Well, actually, you know, we touched on this a bit in the past year, but you know, going back to the graveyard shifts, it's like when we were both listening to 9/11 Synchronicity and just like actively pursuing everything that Richard Grove was putting out at that point in time, which was a huge amount of data. It was quite fascinating. But it's a question of, like, you were just starting the show at about that time, and he wasn't even done with Synchronicity yet.
No.
Like, you had just started that, and so I've always wondered, like, at what point, like, did the show Synchronicity, like, push you to, like, motivate you to go even further and faster with what you were working on?
I think it probably did. I can't say that had there not been 9/11 Synchronicity that I wouldn't have started Media Monarchy radio show. And again, now that it's several years past, I can't remember the exact kind of chain of events. But no, I feel absolutely the kind of birth and that, you know, that spark to put, I guess, kind of the, not the finishing move, but to really kind of kick it into motion, I think ran, concurrently with being turned on and being so kind of energized by 9/11 Synchronicity.
Mm-hmm.
That was, that kind of last push of just sort of like, I think I know what I want to do with this.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. Yeah, I totally had a similar thing going on with that. It was just like, you know, you wanted to see what the Pentagon photos looked like, and that's what led you into doing your own research.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and for me, I was always skeptical of stuff, but it was really 9/11 Synchronicity that made me go, I need to be asking more questions.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think Synchronicity would be something to recommend to other people who want to...
Absolutely. Yeah, because, I mean, the show, that's what's genius about the way you kind of built it, is that it grows and builds. So if you start from episode one, you kind of start from the ground floor, and or even as he would say, you know, get under the building to the foundation so you can have the understanding. It goes in a way in order that slowly fleshes out, I think, the big picture. So,
well, it's enough of a narrative that it's kind of like you're going on a journey of a story.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody likes a good story.
Absolutely. I mean, for folks who are listening, you know, to audiobooks and things that are, you know, countless hours long, 9/11 Synchronicity is also, I don't even know how many hours
ultimately
it is.
I think the final episode was about 17 hours long. That was one episode.
As a single podcast. So that was the thing. It got bigger, and it made, you know, and it made more demands on you as it went along for you to stay tuned in.
And think.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, you would, I found myself continuously looking up stuff that I had just heard of. You know, like, I'm obsessed with Terrence McKenna. I never even heard of the guy before Richard Grove. Uh-huh. That was awesome. Specifically when it comes to staying motivated, you know, there's plenty of times we all get bogged down with, you know, way too many plates to spin, as it were.
Mm-hmm.
And besides technical information for people who are more interested in becoming the media rather than just hating it.
Or not paying attention to it at all.
Yes, I've watched plenty of people just shut down and tune out.
Maybe they, you know, aren't totally crazy.
No. I can understand it. I just don't do it. But, basically, how do you stay motivated, and what kind of mental or psychological pitfalls do you now know how to avoid?
I think early on, and I was thinking of this when you were talking about how people, that maybe when they first get turned on to things, and not just Media Monarchy, but any kind of alternative media, that you have this spark, and it's like, oh, I want to do something, but in a way, it's almost that you need to still kind of do more homework as you're getting turned on to things, because essentially, I think most the information war is waged kind of one-on-one, I think.
Yeah.
That's always been, for me, the most kind of successful way to talk about any of this kind of stuff has been with people, with friends, with family, with coworkers, and people that you know that you can kind of figure out what they're interested in.
Mm-hmm.
But to stay motivated, I guess it's just being a media geek. I mean, I think that's what I've said, is that I basically kind of shifted from, you know, indie rock to alternative media.
Mm-hmm.
And in a way, both have had so many kind of exciting developments. And that was the thing for me, that, you know, all through the 90s and 2000s, the developments in, you know, in indie rock or alternative media, you know, it's just another form of alternative media.
Exactly.
This has all kind of been another form of alternative media. And it's always kind of been the stuff that I've been turned on to, you know, I think throughout my life. So whether it's news and politics or whether it's music or film, I think just the constant fascination of things and the fact that there is something constantly moving forward. I guess it seems a little odd to kind of compare earthquakes and horrible events with, you know, that new record from or whoever that.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope, in a way, that, you know, and I think I said earlier on the show, I get comments on the New World Next Week videos that I guess sometimes bug me, you know, more than they should. And that's the thing about any time you put yourself out there in any way, you know, you're going to be open to criticism. But I guess I didn't really realize until I started to do the videos with James Corbett, and then your face is out there.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get all those kind of ridiculous criticisms about your facial hair and what you do and how you look and your mannerisms and why is that guy always smiling? I think I, in a way, just try and keep some kind of lighthearted aspect to all of the stuff that we cover. To go back to saying, when you first get turned on to things, you get the feeling from, and that was really what helped turn me onto things, was folks like Alex Jones.
Mm-hmm.
But when that's your turn on and that's your key into all of this, it can give you the impression that, oh my God, martial law tomorrow.
Yeah.
And that every event is that catalyzing thing and it's crap hit the fan, and that's what you feel like. And I went through a lot of that.
Yeah.
Of just, oh my God, this is, you know, I think you end up making moves that just turn people off and scare people.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see, and I saw it myself through things that I, you know, would post fervently or email out to people about, you know, this is it, this thing's going to happen tomorrow, false flag, da-da-da, martial law, is that you can only cry wolf so many times before people aren't paying attention.
Exactly.
So we kind of need to wait and parse things and figure out how to make it all make sense to people without scaring people away, but to also at least kind of impress that there are serious, real things going on.
There are things to be paid attention to.
But I think, hopefully, that's why I try and mix so many things together in the show, that maybe the music and the clips and the slick production is the sugar that can help the medicine go down.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah.
Well, you do a pretty good job of being objective about all these things. You don't get emotional, generally speaking. I haven't really noticed.
But is that, I think that as far as like staying motivated, yeah, I think like just being excited about current developments and events.
Well, it's important because it affects people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's your driving factor right there.
Question the next.
Obviously, I've got a lot of practice in this. All right. Let's go back to Radio 23, actually.
Okay.
Because I had a couple of... Here we go. So what... Are they like, making any sort of, like, moves that you see as being just a... Like, do you think Radio 23 is kind of like the alternative media that really seals the deal at this point? Or do you think there's something better that we could be doing collectively to be working together, maybe using that as a jumping-off point?
I think, you know, using that as a jumping-off point, as the telephone rings in the studio. Sorry, folks, I can't answer the phone. I'm live on the air as I hang up on you. But, I mean, I can't speak for Jeff, but I would have to say, you know, that he's probably really stoked by what Radio23.org has kind of grown into, and they now have, like I said, multiple channels. Cascade Community Radio that just has, you know, Pacific Northwest broadcasters and content. And I think there's also been a push to kind of get a non-commercial FM station here in Portland that would be local music, and I think some of that exists in KZME and some of these other places that, again, I'm not fully, you know, versed on.
Okay. Yeah, it's one of those things where I've definitely heard a few things, but just wanted to know if you...
Well, and absolutely, I'd like to think that things like Radio 23 are a future and the future of alternative media. It can't all be that way. I mean, that's the angle for folks, you know, who are into radio. There's going to be something else maybe for video or for folks who... You know, what, theater, music, you know, I think there's going to be hopefully viable ways for those arts and communications to still exist through the changes that may be coming. I guess the fear is basically that, yeah, Media Monarchy, Radio 23, Tragedy and Hope, you know, all these outlets can be a form of, you know, new, forward-thinking, alternative media, but it's still difficult when you know that we're dependent on the lines that are owned by AT&T or Comcast and those sort of the means of delivery.
Sort of like gatekeepers.
But, you know, as long as we can use it, you know, openly, and it is as long as everyone has as much access as anyone else, I think there will still be that more of a gravitational move towards alternative media. And that's what we're talking about, keeping things local and whether that's food or whether that's theater or, you know, Kickstarter, and again, all these ways that can help, you know, grow and foster our own kind of communities, all still with the caveat of, well, Kickstarter, it's like, it's all still online.
Oh, yeah.
There has to be, in some way, I guess, some kind of preparation for, what if the EMP goes off and you don't have internet? For however long amount of time, you know.
Started on the local level, it was a good idea online. Yeah, as a potential.
But, you know, I guess it's covering a lot of different angles and not, I guess, maybe having all the eggs in one basket.
Nice.
But, I mean, I mean, I'm hopeful for Radio 23 and PRA and, you know, all the other outlets.
And speaking of other outlets, you mentioned a moment ago Tragedy and Hope, and I heard a little rumor that you might be having something in the works with Tragedy and Hope Online Magazine. Can you shed some light on that at the moment?
That is true, and the cat's, I think, totally out of the bag. TragedyandHope.com is an online community where independent media hosts and other folks all kind of meet up and share ideas, and it's basically built as a social network site to where you can have friends and groups and do all those things that you can do on social networking sites. And within the TragedyandHope.com community, within the groups of things discussing, whether it's, you know, the Trivium, you know, the Lost Tools of Learning, or vaccination, or, you know, health stories, or any of those kind of areas, the one that jumped out at me was called Navigating Netflix. And it was a way to, and essentially the blurb is that, you know, Netflix subscribers find, you know, diamonds in the rough all the time, but there are things that are kind of hidden in there, and they're maybe not the things that Netflix is going to put up on the front screen and say, hey, you should watch this, which they're not going to do with, hey, you should watch this documentary about, you know, Carnegie and the, you know, Steele and the early elites and barons and all those things. But it's there. Mm-hmm. There are documentaries about that within Netflix. So the group was about finding those diamonds in the rough and posting them to the group for other people to kind of go, oh, I'll watch that. And Netflix essentially has, you know, a really cheap deal where if you subscribe at the lowest level, which gets you, I'm not sure how many, you know, physical DVDs a month, but you still have unlimited viewing, regardless of however many discs you want to get a month. So for a cheap subscription, you have unlimited streaming with, you know, content that's only growing and growing and growing, and I constantly see stuff on there. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, my God, you know, damn, I've always wanted to see that, but it was never on DVD or, you know, just never had an opportunity. Mm-hmm. So for whatever reason, the idea kind of grew and turning Navigating Netflix into a podcast. The website is live, NavigatingNetflix.com. It's live, and it's still kind of under construction. I'm still playing with the logo and the layout, and I'm still haven't really quite in my mind solidified what the format of the show may be, and maybe that won't happen until we've got a few in the can. I don't really know. But the idea will be to pull from members of the Tragedy and Hope community who are in the group who have films, shows, documentaries, and things that are available on Netflix that they've watched and that they've enjoyed. I mean, it's basically a book club for Netflix.
Yeah, that sounds pretty awesome.
Now, for any, for as far as any kind of target date, I'm really not sure. I mean, hopefully in the next, you know, couple of months, hopefully should see a show come out. But again, whether it's, I don't know if it's going to be audio or video or sometimes one or some, yeah, I haven't fleshed out all those things, but again, NavigatingNetflix.com is, the site is live.
Hmm. Well, I've got a bit of a softball question that I was holding off, but it should be fairly easy. You recently changed your closing statement at the end of the show.
Oh. You know, and that's something, and I've had other folks ask me about other things, you know, that's either in, say, the notes that are on the website, the show notes, or some of the things on the show. And not always is there some grand design behind some of the things that are in there. Now, of course, you know, I wouldn't just accidentally say something, but the way things maybe started early on, I think I just kept in place because, again, I like the consistency. And again, I think that comes back to having a live show at a given time that folks can count on, you know, some level of quality that they expect from their nightly news. So to try and be as kind of consistent as possible, some things that maybe started out, you know, is maybe not that big a deal, or, you know, even the main quote that that's always surrounded the show about, you know, the 1984, whether we went on with the diary, was never any sort of like, yes, that's the mission statement, you know, of the site. It was just early on kind of a quote about, well, in a way, doing a website like this is sort of like keeping the diary that could get you in trouble later, as they're going to crack down on all of these kind of thought police kind of things. So it is a comment on doing a website like Media Monarchy, knowing that, you know, and early on, you know, folks like my mom are just like, oh, you know, don't get in trouble. You're not doing anything you're not supposed to, are you? But if you're, as far as the end of the show, referring to, because I guess what it was, well, either I end shows with what Webster Tarpley would say, and that's get active or get radioactive.
Yeah, you haven't said that as much.
I think I've slowly, either by design or sometimes, again, when the mic is live and you're on and you just, you know, I'm a chatty dude and things fly out of my mouth. So there's sometimes, it, like I said, it's maybe not a grand design, but for there's a part of me that I like the saying from Jello Biafra of Dead Kennedys, don't hate the media, become the media. And I've found that to be maybe a more positive thing. I mean, not that, you know, get active or get radioactive isn't a positive thing. It's kind of a motivational thing. True. But within there, you know, it still contains that, you know, radioactivity. I guess, you know, don't hate the media, you know, still has the word hate in there, but
but it implies a certain amount of more positivity.
I think so, and maybe more specific to what I'm doing with this kind of media outlet. Because, again, maybe I'm not, you know, get active. Does that mean, you know, go out and protest on the street or yell, like, well, I'm not really going to, or bullhorn, I'm not really going to do that stuff.
Yeah.
So, yeah, maybe, yeah, don't hate the media, become the media, I think is a more maybe apt kind of slogan or rallying cry.
I think it implies more participation.
And yeah, so, and that's an even better thing, again, to try and get folks in. So, we're coming down to about 15 minutes. You want to start to blast through any, just any of the things in there?
Actually, I've already blasted through most of it. I haven't had to do a radio interview in 3 years.
Well, I know there was some, you wanted to ask about, I think, a bit of kind of like a cult and belief system kind of things.
That's my specialty. But, I totally, what was it? Well, one of the things that I came across, you know, while I was always doing research during the graveyard hours was that, you know, it's kind of a funny thing that we're always told that, you know, magic is one of those things just for Disneyland, you know. It's in a fairy tale. And yet, over and over and over again, all of these people who are in positions of power also are participating in these bizarre rituals. And so I basically came to the conclusion that, well, they're obviously doing something. They're in power.
Mm-hmm.
So, what are your feelings on that? I mean, is there any sort of validity in these more esoteric subjects that, I mean, obviously they're holding on to it, so there's something very valid there.
Yeah.
But what does that mean for the everyday person?
I think there's absolute validity to it. I think as I guess I've maybe said on the show, that there are those things that, you know, I may be interested in, but it's maybe not something I want to put on the site.
Because,
of course, I already, you know, will catch grief from folks for having, you know, Clyde Lewis has something about aliens, and people go, oh, why are you putting that crap on your site?
Yeah, yeah.
But as far as, I mean, I think a lot of folks out there know that I had a, you know, conservative Christian upbringing and went to the church Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night till I was 15. And the only way, and I don't know that I've ever told this on the radio before, that the only way I got out of going to church on Sunday was that one of my first jobs at the age of 15, I was a dishwasher at a restaurant. I had them put me on Sundays.
Specifically, yeah.
So that I could get out of going to church. So then go to my mom and say, oh, they put me on Sundays. What can I do? I'm just the peon. I don't have any pull with the schedule.
I must say I've probably done that myself.
But I guess, you know, as far as the belief systems and things go, I don't know if I would at this point call myself, you know, agnostic or, you know, there's something going on in the world. And is there higher power? You know, a lot of these things, I feel like I come down on the way that I come down on sometimes things like aliens or other. It's like, I have never seen any evidence of it.
Yeah. You haven't seen it personally.
And, you know, I would basically say that, you know, yeah, there was probably a guy named Jesus Christ. And if we followed his teachings and ideas as much as we claim that we do, we'd probably be in better shape. But beyond that and all the other things that surround it and, you know, end times and prophecy. And, I mean, growing up in the church, it was a lot of Armageddon, you know, Revelation, end times kind of stuff. And we see more and more of this coming with all the things in Israel and possible, you know, prophecies and these certain things have to happen. But, whatever sect or religion or cult you're talking about, they all have their in-game, in-time scenario that's meant to be. And they're all going to actively work to make it happen.
Make it happen.
So, in a way, it's like, well, if this wasn't really, you know, God with a capital G's plan, it's like, well, they're certainly going to make something happen. And unfortunately, the more you learn about, you know, all the other technologies and things, that it's like, man, they could pretty much fake most of the things in Revelation to an extent. As far as, you know, there'll be armies, you know, that will converge, you know, on the north to the south, and some kind of earth event will wipe out both those armies, and then the west will be able to say, aha, see, I made that happen. You know, there are these scenarios in end times. It's like, We have scalar weapons. We have weather weapons.
The technology exists.
The technology exists.
Fake anything.
And probably
block. So how do you believe anything?
Like Project Bluebeam stuff was probably exactly. Early things that you and I talked about. You know, this either fake alien invasion or fake, you know, rapture. Or weather or fake, you know, kind of religious event. That does really fascinate me endlessly. Mm-hmm. I guess when it's esoteric and occult, I mean, it's probably just also my own just lack of, you know, mm-hmm. knowledge and awareness about a lot of those areas that keeps me from going, you know, kind of fully into it. Mm-hmm. But if it's in the realm of talking about, you know, staged media events or Orson Welles and War of the Worlds and these technologies that I can, you know, wrap my head around, that's an angle I can approach.
Mm-hmm.
I guess, these kind of stories, but, I mean...
Something more solid.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But, I mean, as far as... I don't know. I guess it feels strange to discuss, I don't know, the belief systems of things, because I don't know. Mm-hmm. I guess it depends on...
Well, I study religion, so it's totally a me question.
No,
so.
I know, but and that's what's funny. I mean, coming from a churchy background,
mm-hmm.
as much as I would like to say, I don't really believe any of it.
Mm-hmm. Well, belief implies a certain amount of faith.
Exactly.
As opposed to knowing.
Yeah, that's a good point. But it was drilled so much into my head at a young age that it's mm-hmm. still hard to kind of escape. And having that background, at least on some level, can help me go, oh, there's that thing in Israel mm-hmm. they were talking to, or these, you know, events that I know they're kind of pushing for.
Mm-hmm. I heard about that in Sunday school.
Exactly. Yeah.
And now
exactly.
it's happening.
Exactly.
Interesting.
And that's, you know, that's what's been great hooking up with somebody like Clyde Lewis, too, because he mm-hmm. does a lot of kind of religious history and gets into those areas more that again, I've kind of learned a lot from.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, as far as, you know, I was a, you know, born again Christian at a mm-hmm. young age, and you know, the belief is that, you know, that can never be undone.
Yeah.
So, the you know, the part of me would go, well, I guess I'm good then. I can...
You seem fairly decent to me.
Yeah, I can... Well, no, I meant, like, I should be good to go in that, well, if it's all, you know, if it's all a bunch of crap, then it doesn't really matter. We're all, you know, worm food anyway.
Gotcha.
But if it is all true, I am technically a born-again Christian, so...
Mm-hmm. But then you guys start going into, well, is this the right religion? Or was it that one that was older?
Yeah.
Or is it the one that was before that? It's an ad infinitum kind of game.
So I guess to flip it around to ask you to ask me, I don't know, what kind of things do you think folks wonder about the site and the show? Or any other kind of, you know, behind the curtain kind of things? I guess I try not to keep things too kind of mystical in a way where it's like, you know, I tell everybody, you know, what music we use or where, you know, all of those kind of things.
Well, I think there's always been, like, just in general, since it was invented, there's always been the mystical relationship between the listener and the person on the other side of the radio.
Yeah.
So it's one of those things that's kind of impossible to avoid.
Mm-hmm.
But... I don't know. You seem more open than most, so I guess it just makes somebody want to go, what else? You know, like,
yeah.
I want to know more.
That may be,
because
yeah.
you're so open with it.
And that can sometimes, and maybe that's the double-edged sword sometimes, that, you know, being what I think, you know, makes the show fun is being, you know, kind of personable and more conversational and,
mm-hmm.
you know, was always told, you know, even back on, you know, the FM radio in Shepherdstown, West Virginia, that, you know, don't imagine you're talking to thousands of people.
Mm-hmm.
Just imagine you're talking to, you know, a handful of friends, and I've always tried to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And again, having a set place and a set time to do the show can kind of help that and not so much make it feel like, oh my God, there's, you know, there's going to be people listening live, and it's got to be perfect.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so the more you give, the more people are going to kind of want out of it, I guess.
Yeah, I guess I could see that. You open up a can of worms and, see, look at this.
Uh-huh.
And then they want to see more.
So I guess, do those... What other notes were we going to discuss? Oh, yeah. I don't know that we can really get into transhumanism and...
Oh, gosh, no.
Time Wave Zero and any of those kind of things. No, I would... You know, one thing I wrote down, and to go back to again, you know, that we kind of met at work, working the graveyard shift, stocking groceries, where you could have one, you know, earbud in, and you could be listening to podcasts, and you could be listening to audiobooks or lectures or Terrence McKenna or 9/11 Synchronicity or... You know, whatever shows of that day, and because it, I mean, it was an 8-hour shift.
That was one of the advantages of working graveyard.
I could keep up on so many podcasts, and yeah, I mean, it was kind of an accelerated kind of learning curve. But now there's no way, you know, and I fortunately work in the daytime, and it was good too because now I'm able to talk to
people,
talk to more people, and talk to coworkers, and to come back to that thing of like that's where I think. You know, the information war is, it's kind of one-on-one in talking with folks. It's never for me been about, you know, bullhorning or yelling at people or getting in people's faces or any of that kind of stuff. Yeah, it's always just been more of a kind of one-on-one thing that, you know, most effectively for me does it. One thing I do, I told somebody this the other day, and I think they enjoyed it. And maybe actually it was you, but...
Possibly.
At the job when on... lunch break, like there's our little break room upstairs where there's usually all the pieces of newspaper from the day, and it's basically the Oregonian and the New York Times. So flipping through the papers while I'm having my lunch, I usually have a pen or grab a pen, and so when there are articles that rub me the wrong way, I add little addendums and little notes on the articles about, yeah, you know, that essentially say, yeah, but what about da-da-da, or, you know, Google... You know, such and such.
I noticed they didn't talk about this part.
Exactly. So, for case in point, I think the last one I did was this, the story about Goldman Sachs, you know, further into bed with Facebook, and they had this kind of chart that mentioned all of Facebook's, you know, kind of wealthy donors and starters. And so below it, I just kind of wrote, you know, with a little asterisk, it was like not listed. InQtel, the investment arm of the Central Intelligence Agency. And just adding little things like that in the newspaper. So then, I don't know who's going to come up next and, you know, flip through it and maybe see it. And maybe they're going to go, hey, what's, you know, what's the deal with that? And
well, it's kind of funny. Like, I've totally had the same thing in my workplace environment, except I don't end up writing with it. Like,
thanks. You don't end up vandalizing things?
Well, no, not on the paper, per se. But, like, you know, people... Thanks to you, actually, I blame you for this. Like getting the interpersonal dialogue going on, especially after getting out of graveyard shift, like can basically make you a bit of a go-to person for questions that people have in the
absolutely.
Newspaper.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And that's how I've made a majority of my friends at my workplace, just because. They don't have the time necessarily to do all the research, but they know that I have no life.
or know that that's a passionate area of yours. So then
exactly.
When something happens, they're like, oh, I'm going to ask. Yeah, you're the dude I wanted to ask about. Like, I mean, I said, I got so many questions from folks about WikiLeaks.
Exactly.
Just a few weeks ago. I was like, man, this is, you know, unbelievable.
Couldn't keep up with it.
Yeah, it was amazing. Man, we're pretty much out of time here, and I don't know if we got into, you know, as many of the areas as we wanted to, but I hope for folks, you know, it shed some kind of light on things. And again, I just wanted to bring on you as a personal friend and as someone who's been with Media Monarchy, like we said, from the very beginning. So your input and your, you know, kind of, you've helped keep me motivated. You and Richard Grove and my girl, you know, and those kind of closer folks, that's a motivation too, to kind of help things, you know, keep moving, and those folks help, you know, spread the word about the show or ask questions or, you know, are there for help. So again, I think having you on is sort of also just kind of a thank you to you for the help that you've given Media Monarchy.
You were more than welcome.
Thanks, man. So
I
can...
I keep having episodes to listen to.
You're like,
you keep bringing the content, I'll still be here.
I will. So we can provide some links for folks, because you run a few blogs, and of course, like everyone, we're all on InQtel's Facebook. And Zach, if you want, we can supply links for folks, and they can get in touch with you. And because, yeah, like I said, you have a few blogs, and you get into more esoteric things that, again... Media Monarchy may not touch. So, again, thanks so much, man.
Yeah, anytime.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, bringing to a close the 200th episode of MediaMonarchy.com. Like I said, sure, I want to do some big grandiose thing with, you know, dancers and pyrotechnics, but, you know, it's just not feasible. And the news and everything keeps moving on so rapidly that it's all I can do to kind of keep up with the way that we do this show. So, needless to say, I can't do it without you. Your support helps keep all of these things going. Your donations are greatly appreciated. And again, you can make contact with me, MediaMonarchy@gmail.com, and we'll keep doing it. This has been episode 200 for January 7th, 2011. My name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com, reminding you, as we noted earlier, don't hate the media, become the media. Take care.
MediaMonarchy.com is your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. Featuring weekly radio shows on the Portland Radio Authority, PRAradio.org, the New World Nexus video series with CorbettReport.com, plus special interview episodes, B-sides, mixtapes, and so much more. Send your tips to MediaMonarchy@gmail.com. You can make a donation or mail media to the Monarchy at P.O. Box 12165, Portland, Oregon 97212. Thanks to all the internet and community radio stations who broadcast these shows, and most of all, thanks to you. Remember, don't hate the media, become the media.
Whether you went on with the diary, or whether you did not go on with it, made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.